You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
It's Sam Cedar, launching an illegal invasion and occupation of your brain.
Hello, folks. This episode of The Majority Report is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting gives you big savings and billing clarity for mobile phone service. Try their online savings calculator right now and save $50 on your device purchase at majorityreport.ting.com.
The Majority Report with Sam. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, November 13th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, on the, I guess, the General Petraeus scandal, the real Petraeus, and now the, I guess it's the General Petraeus, General Allen, shirtless FBI agent scandal, will be Michael Hastings from BuzzFeed. Hey, he still writes Rolling Stone, too. We'll get to the bottom of that as well. Also on the program, new documents released as to what exactly was the offer that President Obama put on the table for grand bargain attempt number one. I know a lot of you emailed me and said he would never sell out Social Security or Medicare. What are you talking about? Now it's in black and white. Also on the program, briefly we'll mention the Rolling Jubilee. Tomorrow we'll be talking to David Graeber about this. Occupy Wall Street, offshoot, will be buying up debt, distressed debt. More on that as the show continues. Also, here's a bad idea. Put a tattoo on your face promoting Romney Ryan. It's a bad idea even if they won, but in this case, it turns out, you'll have something to tell your grandkids. The Voting Rights Act will
tell your grandkids. You could just show them.
Yes. You'll have some explaining to do. Voting Rights Act heads to the Supreme Court. And that and more on today's program. Hi, folks. I'm back live. Members, of course, had a show yesterday. Really, I thought, interesting, a couple of interesting conversations from the Majority Report archives. Sorry, non-members. And still sort of in my, well, not so much, it wasn't so much the election, I think, that threw me for, it was the run-up to the election. That was tricky for me. But we are back, and back on it. Want to just give you a reminder, today is Tuesday, tomorrow is Wednesday, the following day is Thursday. That's not the reminder, the days of the week. But Thursday is the last day that you have to vote for the Majority Report at podcastawards.com. We are in the running for two awards, People's Choice Awards and News and Politics. You can vote every day. That means Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday now. You just got to confirm it when they send you an email. Please, folks, very helpful to the show. As you know, our marketing budget is at zero. And so this is the way that this is one of the few ways that we have to market the show. Through the survey that we are we will ask you to take in the coming weeks, we're already seeing some indication that Podcast Awards drives members. So and drives listeners. And this in the light of, look, liberal talk thrown off of KPOJ, I think, starting this weekend in Portland. I've heard also in Seattle and a couple other stations in Washington, of course, because now they feel they have Clear Channel doesn't feel like they have to service that element of their talk. Much easier, much cheaper to put up a sports station or a I think that seems to be it, Fox Sports on these stations. And so more and more progressive talk will be a something that is accessible only online. And this is the new normal. This is the new reality. It's your support that makes these shows possible. And it is we only get our revenue essentially from members. In the run-up to the election, we had some ads. We still have some ads, but for the most part, it is members that support this program. And, you know, I don't want to be in a position where we're talking that the show may end because we don't have enough members. I know a lot of people out there who that would be the only thing that would drive them to a membership. But it also it keeps this show continuing and thriving. And it frankly allows me to dedicate more time to it. So that way I would get like 3 hours of sleep as I'm responding to emails at midnight. But but podcastawards.com, very easy to do. Just take you a minute. Appreciate your any help you can give us on that accord. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Michael Hastings about this whole brouhaha. We'll be right back after this.
If she wants to dance and drink all night, well, there's no one that can stop her.
This episode of The Majority Report is brought to you by Ting. Ting, T-I-N-G, is a new mobile service that makes sense. It's all about bringing billing clarity, usability, and big savings to mobile phone users. It's built on the Sprint network. It has a simple plan with honest, fair pricing that bills for megabytes, minutes, and text messages separately. If you use less than you thought you would, you're automatically credited the difference at the end of each month. Ting means big savings. And they have great customer service. It's a bunch of geeks. They don't make you wait between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. They can do it via phone or via email support. Ting. And if you go to majorityreport.ting.com, use their usage calculator, see how much money you're going to save. If you end up using Ting and you buy one of their handsets, you get $50 off. Majorityreport.ting.com. It just makes sense.
Track more.
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the program Michael Hastings from BuzzFeed. He is, of course, as is tradition around here, he is in the car driving on a highway. Michael, are you there? All right, Michael, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, sorry about that. We had a little technical difficulties. Where are you driving?
I-95 north from D.C. to New York. I'm on my way. I have a I'm moderating a panel discussion with Oliver Stone tonight at the Union Square Barnes & Noble. So I got to get back to talk to Oliver, and I'm sure we'll be discussing General Petraeus there too.
All right, so let's go into. I saw your appearance on CNN with God, I can't even remember his name now. The British guy, and
Piers Morgan tonight.
Yes, exactly. Quite enjoyed it. Let's go through just, you know, the whole sort of breadth of the scandal, because you last night you were aware of another element of this that was dropping, and then we'll go into
right.
Petraeus's real legacy. I mean, the irony of all of this is that despite everything that we know Petraeus has been engaged in over the past decade, more or less, it is ultimately something sort of silly that is bringing him down. And but so first off, I mean, this is all seems just incredibly strange. The guy has an affair. We find out about, or first the FBI starts investigating him because of the affair. Because
right.
Walk us through this. Because a third person went to a shirtless FBI agent.
Yeah. So here, basically, here's the thumbnail version of events. General Petraeus commissioned essentially a biography of himself by a former military woman. Actually, I think she's still in the reserves, named Paula Broadwell. Paula Broadwell and General Petraeus started having an affair at some point. They claim that they didn't start having the affair until he was at CIA. I find that not very credible, but that's just me.
Michael, hold on, let me stop you there. You don't think that her journalistic integrity would have prevented her from having an affair while she's writing the book?
Well, we know for a fact that just this past 2 weeks ago, she did a piece for Newsweek called, the 12 Lessons of Leadership from General Petraeus. So even after she'd been interviewed by the FBI, admitted to the affair, was in trouble for possibly having classified information, she was still out there as a spokesperson for General Petraeus, essentially. I mean, and I guess spokesperson is the wrong word in this case, kind of an advocate for his leadership series.
Now, we should say also that the relevance of this affair starting when he was at the CIA is that as a an officer, military code of justice would have made it a legal, essentially, a court-martial offense to have had an affair as an officer. Is that right?
Well, yes, it's against the rules for him to have had an affair as an officer. And I think there's also questions to be raised. Paula Broadwell is still in the reserve, so she's a lower-ranking officer. She's a major. So it would not only be having an affair, which is against the rules, but it's a rule that gets broken all the time, but also with a subordinate. And whether or not – I'm not actually sure if that's illegal or against the rules, but it's frowned upon.
Okay, so
the fact that they're spinning this, I mean, look, I reported this, I broke this news, and not out of any pleasure. I mean, I'm not one for the salacious details about someone else's personal life like that, but you know, they spent in July 2011, Petraeus brought her on a trip to Europe that was funded by the Pentagon. So you know, are you telling me that nothing happened in Paris?
It's a very romantic city. It's a very romantic city. But all right, so we know.
And now the third woman who seems to be the key to all of this.
Okay, please, go ahead.
Third woman, a woman named Jill Kelly. We know she's from Tampa, and Tampa is where CENTCOM headquarters is located. General Petraeus was at CENTCOM for 2 years. I was down in Tampa for about a two-year period. That might be a little off my dates there. And we know that that she was close friends with Petraeus. And apparently, we learned last night that she was also involved in a email relationship of some sort with the other commanding general in Afghanistan, a Marine general named John Allen. And it was harassing emails sent to Jill Kelly from Paula Broadwell that sparked the shirtless FBI investigation.
Now my understanding is that Kelly went to the shirtless FBI guy is a guy who Kelly had a relationship with, who apparently sent her shirtless photos of himself, there's a couple of things that seem a little weird about this. One, why do you go to a guy who's sending you shirtless photos to check on these emails? Two, what's in it? Why is the FBI taking a case of a woman getting six emails or whatever it is, harassing emails? And why do they dig into? Is this their job?
Well, I think my guess, and I'm assuming a lot here because I have not talked to the FBI agent and I have not talked to, obviously, Jill Kelly. But my read of the situation is that she's friends with this guy from the FBI. I don't read too much into the shirtless pictures as much as clearly this is a woman who you know, has a lot of friends, very social. I don't think it's an Anthony Weiner type situation. I think it might be more innocent than that. But I think she says to her friend in the FBI, hey, can you help me out? Can you figure out who these emails are being sent from? Apparently they go, her friend introduces her to the cybercrime squad. The cybercrime squad initially said, well, no, this doesn't seem like it merits it. But then they looked into the statute of La Costa and they found an excuse to go searching around in Paula Broadwell's email account. Now, they didn't know it was Paula's at the time. They found that out later. And then they realized that, oh, my God, this fake email account of Paula Broadwell that's sending harassing emails is also communicating with the head of the CIA.
Right.
Now, again, I'm not a big – I'm an anti-secrecy, anti-national security state guy. But, you know, playing by their own rules, if they think that the head of the CIA is somehow – his own secret email account is somehow breached by someone who's also sending trending emails. You can sort of see how there's a legitimate, case once you get there to say, oh, well, actually what's really going on here.
Right.
But I think it was a favor. It was a favor to the shirtless guy to start looking into it.
And then that takes place several months ago, but then a couple of weeks ago, the shirtless guy, who turns out to be, as far as I can tell, we've only heard the reporting I've seen is that his worldview, which suggests that he has a worldview that made him believe that the Obama administration was sitting on this and preventing the FBI from investigating it, caused him to go to his local congressman, who then forwarded him to Cantor in the House, the Republican majority leader in the House, Eric Cantor. And then Eric Cantor, I guess, went to Mueller, the head of the FBI, and said, hey, what's going on here? Are you guys sitting on this? Is that right?
That's my understanding from the reporting of it. Now, I think actually, it's strange. This guy's worldview, clearly he doesn't have that great of a political because this is not a scandal that would have hurt Obama's chances for re-election, I do not think, because it doesn't really reflect badly on the White House. In fact, the White House has viewed Petraeus with suspicion for quite some time, and that's why he's at CIA, right? They took the most high-profile general of his generation, didn't give him the Joint Chiefs of Staff job that he wanted, and gave him the most low-profile position in Washington, the one where he's not doing press conferences every week.
Right.
So the idea that this guy thought that, oh, you know, this needs to come out now, and the Obama administration is sitting on it. Now, could you see a situation where people in the White House had a back channel conversation or sort of were aware that this was going on? Certainly, you know, I don't think that's far fetched. But this idea that and I think, you know, kudos to Eric Cantor for not you know, just trying to exploit this politically at the time too. But though I don't think there's anything political to exploit. Like, what, you know, there's no, you're a Republican hawk, you don't get much credit for blowing up General Petraeus' career. You know, that's right. Not something they like to do.
And so by worldview, I mean, you know, and to a certain extent, this is one of the most disturbing parts of the story for me, is that this FBI agent, his whole notion that maybe, you know, that President Obama has secret czars who are protecting, you know, yeah, all these, I guess, whatever it is, affairs that are going on. It's a little more disturbing to me that that we've got FBI agents going around acting upon that, those type of worldviews, aside from just having those worldviews.
Sure. And we know, I mean, look, like, one of the fascinating, you know, responses to the story is how you have all these, you know, creatures of the national security bureaucracy. You see them on CNN, like someone like a Fran Townsend, who all of a sudden are worried about our civil liberties.
Right.
What is the FBI doing investigating my friend Dave Petraeus? When in fact, you know, they've been committing these kinds of violations, you know, post 9/11 with fair regularity. Without much justification, they've been spying on political activists, Occupy Wall Street people, you know, Muslims, you know, and general, you know, people they consider enemies of the state. Now, along with that, the worldview question, right? We're talking about Tampa. We're talking about CENTCOM. We're talking about a conservative, obvious, conservative military culture. Obviously, the FBI is not military, but clearly, Phil Kelly was in this sort of conservative world. Petraeus is conservative. My guess would be Allen also falls into that group. So yeah, you have this, you know, wealthy slash well connected you know, military establishment down there in Tampa that is generally conservative and you know, hostile, I would suggest, to Judge President Obama's interests.
You know, and not to put too fine a point on it, but I want people just to contemplate this, that if a FBI agent's worldview could believe that President Obama is sitting on an affair with dealing with General Petraeus, and we can fill in the blanks here. I'm sure the words Benghazi are on this guy's mind.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm sure,
yeah.
You know, the, you know, who knows, you know, the secret, the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, if this guy can be inspired to do this, to go after this level of crazy, the idea of FBI agents and other people who have access to emails, infringing upon the privacy rights of just average citizens,
yeah,
I would imagine is quite high. And so,
well,
you know, this,
oh my gosh,
this,
yeah,
is,
sure. I mean, look,
very,
I mean,
instructive.
Sam, I'm sure you've gotten your share of threatening emails over the years. You know I have. Do you think if you went to the FBI, they'd spend too much time tracking down who sent it to you?
No, of course not. Of course not. And
yeah,
so, I mean,
there you go.
The elements of the story of just sort of the corruption of the sort of the nepotism, and also the fact that, you know what, FBI agents can be crazy too, and FBI agents can be massively paranoid, and mm-hmm, if they can do this in terms of the head of the CIA, they can surely do it in terms of the head of a guy who organizes community organizing, or, you know, is mm-hmm, running a food bank, or protesting against the treatment of animals, whatever it is. I mean, so
yeah,
this has been,
yeah,
rather instructive in that regard. And so,
sure.
Now, what of this, you know, just to get sort of some of this sort of like extraneous stuff out of the side, there was also a Paula Broadwell went out, I guess was on CNN, claiming that there was a CIA, that what was going on in Benghazi was a CIA safe house or something.
I believe that was at a... some sort of forum in Denver, I believe, some sort of like, you know, think tank event, but maybe it was on CNN, but
right.
I saw her say it at a forum, but yeah.
Okay, yeah. Now, and so what? So what? What's that about? I mean, where does she get this in? I mean, that's also problematic too, I think. I mean, it just shows the relationship between. All right, fine. They're dating each other, but theoretically, she's a journalist. She shouldn't be having this type of information, right? I mean, people are sent to jail and prosecuted for giving journalists this type of information if the information was even true.
Well, that's okay. And I'm going to preface this by saying, you know, I wrote this in my piece the other day about this. You know, the way Paula Broadwell is about to be treated, being a woman and being involved in this thing, is inherently unfair. But I'm going to step back, and it's not about her being a woman. It's about her pretending to be some sort of objective military analyst, you know. And the idea that I read her book multiple times. I swear to God, I was probably the only person to read it besides her co-author and her editor. You know, nobody actually read this book when it came out. But they tried to sell it as this package of, you know, this kind of great military, you know, military analysis into Petraeus. But there was nothing there. What was interesting that she didn't actually put anything of any value in that book except for a few small nuggets. So she doesn't publish this stuff, right? But now she goes from fawning biographer to, you know, think she's Cy Hirsch or Woodward and Bernstein, dropping, you know, dropping classified information and not publishing it, mind you, but dropping bits of classified information at some forum with other, you know, military think tank types. And I think this is problematic in many ways. A, I'm all for, you know, national security bureaucrats giving us secrets, right? Like, as a journalist, I sometimes deal with classified information, sometimes I don't. And it's something that when you are dealing with it, you got to be really good. You got to be very careful. You got to be careful to protect your sources. You got to be careful to protect, you know, how you frame the information, how you source the information. Especially when you're dealing with very sensitive information, like the fact that there may have been a prisoner, a secret CIA prison in Benghazi, which is huge news. Now the CIA has denied it. So it's funny how she went from, you know, fawning biographer and then, you know, trying to pretend that she's some, you know, this sort of, you know, intelligence scoops that she's doling out. And I think that does raise questions about where is she getting your information. Was it directly from Petraeus? Is Petraeus leaking his mistress, you know, top secret classified information? I don't even – look, if your mistress – you know, I don't even – like, good for King David to leak classified information, but – he should, you know, leak it to me next time, you know? Like,
right.
You don't need to be sleeping with a person to leak it to someone.
Right. Indeed. And, and
you
know,
I'm being facetious there. This is a
no,
serious
of course.
Matter, and I'm having a little fun with it, but
well,
it is pretty
no,
serious.
No, I mean,
you know?
Look, there's no reason not to have some fun with this, because there's so much hypocrisy that is being laid bare by this story.
Oh, man.
In you know, almost in a, like a 360 degree fashion. I mean, one, you know, you mentioned this on Piers Morgan's show, the idea that all of a sudden, you know, if this was Anthony Weiner we were talking about, who didn't reveal any secrets, who didn't possibly break any laws, you know, the press, it's a complete field day. Whereas when we're talking about General Petraeus, it is all because he has been tempted by these women. It is all because, you know, he let his guard down. You know, I mean, it's just absurd. People are talking, some news reporters are talking about, like, you know, their dog died, you know, if for God's sakes. And if it is a case that this guy was leaking classified information, I you know, what do they put him in the brig next to Bradley Manning? Do they send him to jail for 2 years like Kirchhoffer? I mean, let's be honest here. You know, this is there are some very serious charges that are being sort of basically covered up in some respects by the tawdriness of this. And, you know, it is entertaining, but
remember, there are two ongoing federal leak investigations into the White House right now. And those investigations are happening. They're politically motivated investigations that the right was calling for to try to hammer Obama and these guys. And there's no real smoking gun there, I don't think. So where is the right? I mean, I think, like, you know, they're going to have to start calling for an investigation into General Petraeus for this stuff. I mean, you can't avoid it. You just can't avoid it. The national security state, I've seen this on Twitter, but it's a good description. It's eating itself alive in this scandal. And just a point on the hypocrisy angle. You know, as I think people's personal lives, you know, I don't know if anyone I know who I've ever been close to, no one's personal life can really survive this kind of media scrutiny in a way that's not embarrassing and humiliating.
Of course.
That being said, General Petraeus and his acolytes have gone around for the past 7 or 8 years telling us how much better they are than the rest of us, how much more integrity they have, how much more courage, how you know, they somehow represent this ideal of what it means to be a human being. And it was bogus when they said it then, and I see why they say it, but it was just nonsense, you know? And at this point, like, again, I'm not, to me, this is shocked. This has shocked me. I even took them at their word, you know? I didn't think they'd be that reckless. But of course I knew they were going to be. I mean, you check out my book, The Operators, the cover of the book has a general with a shot glass and a pistol in his hand, you know, and that was controversial at the time. But it got up this idea that these guys, you know, can be on the edge in a way and, you know, dealing with, you know, violence and war and these sort of crazy situations. I guess it isn't that shocking that in the end, you'd end up in a situation like this.
All right, let's talk a little bit. I want to talk about General Allen a little bit, but first let's talk about Petraeus. Give us, you know, I mean, I heard you speak about this on CNN, but I think it's also important to put Petraeus in a proper context. I mean, we have,
right.
You know, we've seen at least, you know, guys like Spencer Ackerman, you know, has written a mea culpa about him being about how he was seduced into this sort of a cult of praising Petraeus. It's clearly
right.
The guy has a certain amount of magnetism and had certainly sort of built a cadre of followers who were creating this Petraeus myth. But just talk about sort of who the real Petraeus is, at least
in terms of
a general. Not as a person.
Yeah, right.
I don't care about
who
he is as a person, but in terms of his
right.
the function that he has served in the U.S. government.
Well, and God bless these guys for writing these mea culpas. I'm glad when they realized that they had just been running with the herd, you know, at least I guess we should give them some credit for admitting that they were wrong. But you know what's better than admitting you were wrong? It's not being duped.
Right.
You know, I'm just going to throw that out there as, you know, having some journalistic skepticism, because this isn't the first mea culpa we've seen from these sorts of journalists. They did it on Iraq. Well, they support Iraq, then they come out against it. Support the surge, and like, oh my God, how could we be fooled by the Afghanistan surge? You know, and then now they're doing this with Petraeus. Who is Petraeus as a general? He's brilliant. He's a brilliant guy. He's ambitious. He had a sense and feel of the media and how to manipulate that and shape that in a way that is almost beyond any other public figure that I can think of. Like, brilliant. A master at it. And this starts from the invasion of, it started early on in his career when he was an aide to some of the top generals. And then by the time he became a general, it's the invasion of Iraq, right? And Petraeus does something very savvy. He embeds, he gets a reporter embedded with him named Rick Atkinson, who's a well-known, legitimate, World War II and well-known historian. And, you know, Atkinson then writes the first very favorable account of General David Petraeus and the invasion of Iraq. And there's this great line in it where Petraeus says, "Tell me how this ends." So Petraeus is smart enough. He supports the invasion, goes in, but he also positions himself in the media to be the one kind of raising questions because he sees it's going to be kind of a disaster. And you see him do this throughout his career. He's on the cover of Newsweek in 2004 for his disastrous Iraqi army training program. But at the time they were like, this is the man who can save Iraq. He got a lot of flack from his colleagues about that. And then the key moment, the moment that, you know, he will have, it's amazing. He took Iraq, which the country had decided was a complete debacle, something irredeemable. And he made us feel somewhat okay about it. he scrubbed it. He scrubbed it for the Washington establishment and he did that by a very savvy public relations campaign where he convinced the political elite and media elite in Washington that the surge was a huge success. And that we could leave and we sort of won in Iraq. And there were elements of the surge that were successful, but not in the way that it was sold. And I know I'm going on a long time.
No, that's fine, because I think this is important for us to remember. I mean, when we talk about the success of the surge, we're really talking about a surge of money that went to the Sunni awakening, and then we left them high and dry.
There you go. And we the most vicious Shiite Islamist people that we call terrorists, we supported them, and we gave them a lot of money, and they killed a lot of Americans. And we made deals with them, and it was this horrible, savage, brutal thing, not to mention the 800 Americans who were killed during the surge and the thousands wounded, and the fact that, you know, what we basically did there was take a side in a civil war where at least 150,000 Iraqis were killed, and that's a number that Petraeus will never say. But they don't say, they won't actually tell you how many Iraqis died. You know, they'll say thousands or tens of thousands when the number is much higher than that. So when does the David Petraeus myth start to unravel? And you can actually, there's actually a real moment when this happens. And it occurs when Bob Woodward publishes the book Obama's Wars. Now, Woodward, to his credit, gave us the most critical mainstream picture of Petraeus to date at that point. And it shows how Petraeus manipulated the White House into getting involved in Afghanistan because he started to believe his own myth. And I talked to people at the CIA about this recently, that Petraeus started to believe his own press, and he thought Afghanistan was going to work, I guess. And he gets his war in Afghanistan, and then because McChrystal blew his career up, you know, Petraeus has to go over there and take it over. But again, because he shafted the White House, he doesn't get what he wants. He wants to be Joint Chiefs. But instead, they give him the CIA job, and that's how it all starts to unravel. It starts to unravel because he took his success in Iraq, or his perceived success, and he pushed it too far by getting involved in Afghanistan. And now you have Allen, you have Petraeus, you have McChrystal, you have General William Caldwell, all these guys who could have survived this decade-long war after Iraq with glowing resumes, at least as the Washington elite saw it. Have now destroyed their careers. I mean, it's like all the generals in Vietnam. They wanted to avoid a Vietnam-like situation in terms of how they were remembered, and they didn't. They crashed right into it.
What happens? What's going on with General Allen now? I mean, he was on his way out. My understanding is that they were planning already this week, I think, coincidentally, to have confirmation hearings for Marine General Joseph Dunford to take over for Allen. Is that right?
Yeah, on November 15th, they were supposed to have confirmation hearings.
And so now I presume those confirmation hearings are going to go a little bit easier for Dunford, I would imagine, right?
Well, who knows? Right. I mean, who knows how far this thing goes, really?
Right. I mean, I guess they're going to say, like, have you not for nothing, General Dunford, but do we have an email problem here that we should talk about? Or
No, it's a real shame. It's a real shame. I mean, you know, because look, I'm a pretty harsh critic of the Pentagon, and I always like to remind people too, though, that there's a lot of good people working there. A lot of people really believe in what they're doing, and even people I criticize might really believe in what they're doing. But yeah, I mean, what's this? What are they going to ask this guy? You know, I mean, like, what's the vetting now? I mean, what? You know, have you been emailing with Jill Kelly? I mean, you know, that's a fair question.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. I mean, looking forward, okay, because you know, there's a couple of things. I mean, that I think are quite positive for people who at least hold my perspective that the reverence for the military is beyond where it should be as an institution. Budget for the military is certainly way beyond where it should be for a country. Mm-hmm. But let's start, and I want to address the fallout of those things. But what I'm curious about, and I've seen very little sort of analysis of this, I want to get your sense. One of the things that has been that Petraeus has been credited with, and I use that term value neutrally, is the militarization of the CIA. Several weeks ago, we saw a report that they want to have more drones, that they are becoming more of a paramilitary organization and less of an intelligence gathering organization. I have to imagine that having a military general as in the leadership of one who has worked in counterinsurgency, that has to have a big impact on the direction that the CIA goes in. Are we likely to see a reorientation of the CIA? Because I would also imagine there had been some institutional pushback against sort of militarizing the CIA more than it had been.
Well, it's interesting. Now, my insight on what's going on at the agency, there are other reporters like Greg Miller, say, at the Washington Post, who'd be able to really speak to this stuff in more detail. But my understanding of it, right, is there's two sort of interesting things going on. One, that Petraeus actually was trying to moderate the excessive use of drones. Clearly not that well, because as we know, over 3,000 people have been killed by drones and drone strikes have been going up tremendously. Petraeus worked very closely with JSOC, the Joint Special Operations Command, in both Iraq and Afghanistan, and really ran it at CENTCOM. Remember, and when he was doing CENTCOM, which is the Central Command, which is down in Tampa, he was meeting in Yemen, he was going to Pakistan, he was really working that kind of the hard edge side of the drone war, right? The special forces guys who were involved in all this stuff. And so one would hope that the upshot of all the nonsense that we were with, the shirtless stuff, the 30,000 emails, all this kind of salacious things, one would hope the upshot would be, hey, maybe it's time to take a serious hard look at what the heck these guys have been doing. And I think one of those questions is, do we want the CIA to be a paramilitary force? I doubt they're going to have a general in charge there anytime soon.
Right. Interesting. And in terms of the military as a whole, I mean, do you think this is going to have any – is this going to have any impact in terms of our Afghanistan policy? Is this going to have any impact just in terms, do you think, of just sort of the way the military is perceived? I mean, because right now – I think I've heard Chris Hayes say this on multiple occasions in the research for his book, as he looked at every institution that exists in America, more or less, to the extent that they have been polled in terms of what kind of faith Americans have in them. The military seems to be come out on top every time. And
right.
I'm not
right.
sure that's such a healthy fact for the country. Do you think this will go in any way to, I mean, you know, because my first reaction was, it's like we have doubled our military budget in the past 10 years. And basically it just seems like, you know, I understand that people get caught up in these affairs and whatnot, but I just don't want to put that much power in the hands of people who turn out to be human after all.
Yeah. Well, this is the key, right? Yes, as Chris has pointed out, as you said, the military is the most well-respected institution in the United States. Part of that reason is because most of us aren't really involved in it, so we don't really know what's going on in it, right? Like, the perspective you get, I talk to soldiers, I talk to veterans all the time, people who have a realistic perspective of the military, and that's what we need. It's not about being anti-military or pro-military. It's about being realistic about it. When you go back and you read what veterans of World War II or Vietnam said about the military, people when there was a draft, when there was a lot more people involved, they had a much more realistic view. Is it going to shift perceptions? I think, you have all these guys, they built up these myths, they built up these legends, and they've crumbled, and they've, and despite their best friends in the media trying to protect them still, I don't think it's going to work, because I talked to some people, I've been talking to people about this, and though there's a part of you that always, feels sympathetic, obviously, you never want to see someone be humiliated like this, especially this kind of scandal, but people are sort of sympathetic, but not really, and this kind of these crocodile tears we get from our great, you know, media, our great journalists, are kind of a joke, right? Like, where are the tears for the whistleblowers that the Pentagon has destroyed? You know, where are the tears for the people with real integrity who they've gone after and exposed? They leak secrets from whistleblowers' personal lives to destroy them. I mean, I've done stories, you know, relying on whistleblowers in the military, where they've gone out and they've eviscerated them for personal sins much, much less egregious than what General Petraeus and General Allen are accused of doing. Where are the tears for those guys, men of real courage and integrity, stood up for what they believed in, and got wrecked for it? You know, that's all I'm saying.
Well, Michael, thanks for taking the time with us. Please drive carefully, and I imagine we're going to hear more. Well, not just more about this, but I have a feeling there's more to drop. I mean, it seems like thing has a lot of different aspects to it. And so drive carefully. Don't text while you're driving. Don't check your email.
Thanks.
All right, buddy.
Take
thanks
care,
for
man.
Calling. All right. Folks. Oh, there we go. That is, we're going to head into the better half of the program, wherein we will talk about all sorts of a myriad of different things, ladies and gentlemen. The real fiscal cliff that is coming up for those people who are long-term unemployed, the potential for a grand bargain, and we're past this prologue. We will also talk about the Romney Ryan tattoo face guy. It just goes on and on.
I always think of, remember that time where poor Romney was going, Romney Ryan, Romney yes. Ryan. It's every time I see that tattoo, that's always what I think of, that moment.
There you go. And also, the country, if you're feeling a little lighter today, it may be because it seems like maybe a third or a quarter of the country wants to secede. And so everybody's got a little bit lighter step in there. Looks like Texas, we may be losing. Well, what are you going to do? I guess the prices of barbecue will go up a little bit, but aside from that, I'm not terribly worried. All right, folks, you can support this show by becoming a member at majority.fm. We really need your support. It is your membership that makes this every part of this show possible. Further, if you want to support this program, podcastawards.com. Or you can buy your Amazon junk through our Amazon link at majority.fm. Support the show. That's helpful. JustCoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, chocolate. You know, I think the repeat customers are huge because, you know, we slowly, you know, we don't make a lot of money off it, but we make a little bit of money off it, and it grows. And I think that's because once people try their coffee, they realize, like, I should just set this on auto order. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Buy majority.fm blend over there. It's a great company. It's great coffee. Everybody gets paid. It is really putting your money where your mouth is. Or putting your money and your mouth where it is. Because you drink it. Yeah, we need some marketing help here. All right, folks. 646-257-3920 is the number you can call if you want to be part of this program. Also, you can IM me at Majority FM. I know, folks, I had forgotten to put my IM up. I'll put it up now. And we'll see you in the better half.
Sitting up the